The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. Listeners, as always, wonderful to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us. Our guest joining us right now is a brand new guest. Again, we've had lots of new guests lately, and it's just wonderful to get them on the program. Dr. Lynn Wagerman is an amazing lady. She's absolutely amazing. She's a licensed school psychologist, a teacher, and an author. She has taught at all levels of public schools, as well as the graduate level, where she was an adjunct instructor in the graduate school of the Citadel Military Academy in Charleston, South Carolina. She is currently the owner of Wagerman Educational Services, providing evaluation, consultations, and advocacy for children and parents. Dr. Wagerman has graduate degrees in school psychology and divergent education, as well as a doctorate in curriculum and instruction from Library University. She's also has three books, and we are going to be talking about one of them right now. But without any further ado, Lynn, do you mind if I call you Lynn and not doctor all the time?
Oh, please do. Yes, thank you.
welcome to the program. And we had a little bit of a glitch to start with, but everything's going and we're all set to go. So thank you for joining us. This is wonderful. And thank you for writing this amazing book. The book is called Standing for God in America, How Christians Can Make a Difference in Today's Society. Oh my goodness, Lynn, do we ever need this?
We do. Absolutely. So and I think the timing is just perfect for it.
It is. It is. You're so right. You know, your byline here is a silent Christian is an ineffective Christian. And I love that. This is so apropos for what every morning when we wake up and we look at the news, this is the book we need to read. Don't do the news. Read the book.
Well, watch the news and then read the book to know how to respond.
There you go.
News.
That's great. Absolutely fine. You say in your book that many Christians are frustrated and confused at what's happening in our country. What do you think, Lynn, is the biggest issue for people of faith? What is the thing that's driving us all nuts, in your estimation?
I believe that if you look at what really motivates Christians to stand up, to speak up and say enough is enough, anything that affects our families, the basic family unit, our children, whether that's the gender issues that we're hearing now, whether that's education, whether that's undermining of what marriage is all about, we really see Christians, that is kind of our line in the sand that don't cross that. You can deal, you know, you can talk about all these other things, but don't mess with my family. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're seeing Christians really step up and say, I'm ready to speak up now because this is going too far. And so I really feel like that has been our, line in the sand that we absolutely will not let anyone cross. And it does bother us, whatever's affecting our children. I'm a parent of four and a grandparent of four. And, you mess with my family, I'm going to be that mother bear and stand up and say, no, this is wrong. And so I think that is one thing. And then anything that undermines our religious freedoms. And so when you start to see people trying to tell us what we can and can't do as Christians, as churches, I think you're going to see the Christian people really say, no, that is not right. It's not good. We are in a country that supports religious freedom. And you'll see people begin to stand up. But if it's not those things, unfortunately, Christians don't tend to think that it matters that much. And they're not willing to kind of go out on that limb and speak up and risk being, ridiculed or shunned or as we have cancel culture, you know, they're not willing to do that until it really affects home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're so right. And I think this is, I think we really saw this during the COVID years and the COVID shutdown when parents suddenly realized what was going on in the school classroom. We saw, you know, we've seen, and it has not stopped. It has not got quiet either. Parents are very, very concerned. So I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's also awoken that whole need for us to be able to worship God, to have our religious beliefs, to know that particularly Christians, and right now we are seeing a huge shutdown of Catholics by the administration. And this, to me, a lot of Catholics are waking up to say, oh, you know, they were all just very apathetic about a lot of things, but now you're beginning to see people begin to push back against it. One of the things that you talk about in your book is, and I think this is very, very, timely right now, because you talk about the fact that there's been a growing apathy towards the Bible. Mm-hmm. What has this got to do with our current circumstances?
Well, first of all, we have to realize what the Bible is. It's not just a nice book. It's not just a list of do's and don'ts. It's actually God's letter to his people that encourages us, that teaches us, that tells us what his thoughts and will are for our lives and for our circumstances. And when we realize the power that is in his word and the truth that is there, we should have a hunger and a thirst for that knowledge. And I believe that everything that we've heard just kind of says, you know, that Bible, it's an okay book and it's got some good stuff in it, but it's really not relevant. It was written 2000 years ago. And, you know, you don't really need that. We have all these other books and mine being one of them, you know, that can tell us what to do, but we have to go back to the truth and we have to go back and really know and understand what God's word says and how he wants us to live our lives, because he wants to bless us. He wants to do great things for us and give us abundance. But we can't do that if we're not living according to his will, mm-hmm. and according to what his word says. And so I believe if people really understood, they're missing out. If you're not living according to biblical principles, you're limiting what God can do for you and how you can have a relationship with him and live that abundant life. And so I think we kind of aren't willing to put the work in because we don't think there's that much benefit on the other end of it. But it's not true. It is, there's so much blessing that comes from knowing his word and spending time in it and studying it and recognizing it, that it is as relevant today as it was 2000 years ago when it was
absolutely. And I love that we are limiting his glory. We are limiting ourselves when we don't listen to what the Bible teaches us. I mean, every single issue that we are facing, the answer is there in the beautiful words in our biblical, you know, principles and in the words and the letter, as you say, to, you know, the prophets, the Old Testament, the New Testament. It's amazing. The Psalms. I'm always blown away. I do the 1 year Bible and have done it since 1991. A friend of mine gave me that 1 year Bible, and I've been, you know, I will be very, very honest. I mean, sometimes I don't do it for 6 or 7 days and then I'll pick it up and do it for, you know, nonstop forever. But I miss it. I miss it when I don't do it. It's, you're so right. And, you know, things start to sort of close in because you're not living according to what, or you're not, you can't see the wood for the trees. I think that's the best way to put it. And I love what you say about that. You know, another thing that you talk about is, and I think these two things go together, that our founders proposed three distinct branches of government. And then also you say, and then you answer the questions why they did that. And I want you to answer it for the listeners. I also want to talk about the difference between patriotism and nationalism, which I think comes with that whole question. So, you know, why do we have the three branches of government?
Back in our civics days, when we taught our children, our students about government, we taught them the idea of checks and balances, that, you know, no one branch of government should have all the power. So our founding fathers created this checks and balances. That is true. But there's another reason they did the three branches of government. In Psalms, David said, the Lord is king, the Lord is judge, and the Lord is the lawgiver. And those three titles for God the lawgiver, that's our legislative branch. The king is our executive branch, and our judge is the judicial branch. Our founding fathers were so grounded in biblical principles, they recognized the power of those three roles that God plays in our lives, and they wanted our governmental system to be that same type of structure. Three different branches, all doing different things, but working in unity together for the good of the country. When you asked about, you mentioned about the Americanism, patriotism, and nationalism, I did a radio show on September 11th and was asked about this question. And I said, September 11th was a perfect example of the difference between patriotism and nationalism. Patriotism is good and healthy. It's being proud of your country, proud of what we have to offer people, proud of the culture that we have, and that's all good. We have pride in our military. We have pride in our athletes when they compete in the Olympics. That is all very, very good. I fly the flag on my house, and I'm very patriotic. Nationalism, though, says our nation is superior to all nations. Other nations are inferior, and therefore we should subdue them and conquer them. And we saw that happen in 9/11. We saw nationalism from another country attack our country, but their nationalism that was so destructive raised our patriotism. Huh. I don't believe that we think of our country as being superior to other countries, but we do think of it as being a great example for other people and a land of opportunity. So you can be patriotic, but we don't want to carry it to a nationalism idea that says America is better than all countries and we are the only country that God can bless, mm-hmm. because that is just not true. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've lived in other countries and you know God blesses other countries equally as well absolutely. As he does America. Absolutely. And so we don't have that right to say that we are better than other countries, but we absolutely should be proud of what we have accomplished as a country and be grateful to God for his blessings mm-hmm. on our mm-hmm. country.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because one of the things I always, you know, you hear other countries talking about America, particularly the Canadians. I lived in Canada for 13 years and the Canadians really do. And I'm absolutely generalizing, but in a general fashion, Canadians do not like Americans. They just don't like us. So, it's a very interesting thing to see that they consider that Americans, your description here is very helpful because what they accuse Americans of is nationalism, and in fact what Americans are very patriotic. And I have said this discussion with so many people is you have no idea how humble in so many ways the American people are. Now, you know, Americans are very confident in the love of their country. That's the difference. They love mm-hmm. their country fiercely, mm-hmm. but they're also very humble about their country. So, you know, and you know, they absolutely, when I tell Americans that, you know, when I used to say when we first came, oh, the Canadians, oh, we love Canada. We love, I wish we could go to Canada. So there's a real misconception there. And I love the fact that you've addressed that in your book. Again, the book is called Standing for God in America, How Christians Can Make a Difference in Today's Society. And the author is Dr. Lynn S. Wagamon. So Wogamon. This will all be up on our website where you can get the book, all of that kind of stuff. We will have that there ready for you to go. And if you're listening to this in the car or on a podcast, go to the website to get all the information because we'll definitely be able to get, you'll be able to find it all there. Another good question for you, Lynn, is, and I think these two things go together. You talk about, you define God's definition of a good nation. Then you also talk about biblical morality and secular morality. Talk mm-hmm. about those two things for the listeners.
You know, we have a person that is running for president and has been our president who has a theme, make America great again. Well, I believe that we can't make America great unless America is good. And you can't be good unless you're godly. And so those things all go together. And you know, our God looks at a good nation as a nation that cares for its people, that is that is a just nation, that doesn't show favoritism or partiality, that seeks the benefit of its people. And so as we want to make sure that we are a country that are that is seeking to do those things, that we do have justice in our legal system, that we do show mercy and kindness and compassion to those who need it, and that we are a land of opportunity and support those people. Now, as far as I'm not sure, I can't remember what you said.
No, that's fine. That's fine. What the difference between the biblical, the a moral, a biblical morality and a secular morality, because that's
right.
That's so clear today in today's world in America. There is definitely that difference.
There is definitely a difference. Yeah. And we have our morality, our biblical morality is based on God's viewpoint and what he, his fundamental beliefs in what is presented in scripture. Secular morality tends to come from an individualistic perspective. Secular morality is what is best for me. What is best? What can I do? What are my rights? And we hear that, you know, it's my right to do this. It's my right to do that. And that's all coming from a very secular viewpoint. Secular, basically means it doesn't have any religious background, foundation at all. And so when it's not based on any type of religious fundamental beliefs, then it's subjected to whatever man thinks. Well, we know that man is not wise. Man is sinful. We are fallible. And when you build your morality on what another person's viewpoint or on your own viewpoint or what feels right or what seems to be accepted in the day, it's going to lead you astray. It's not going to be firm and true and lasting. And I think that's what we see now. People are trying to do things that sound good, but it has no biblical foundation. And so it's not going to last. It's not going to be true. And it's going to lead you astray.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So true. I know I have a young girl came to me a while back and was very upset about the fact that, you know, she's a very strong Christian and she was at the Cleveland State University here in Cleveland, and she was doing some sort of health elective that she had to do. And the professor has asked them to write down an 8-page essay on their gender identity, and he provides for them their gender identity, which the things that they're allowed, they can choose from. She was so outraged and said, I can't do this. This is against everything I believe in. I'm not, you know, how do I deal with this? And I think that's a good example of what you're talking about. He's taking this to the nth degree, in that no matter what you feel, no matter what, it's what anybody feels. Everybody's got to have their say. Everybody's got to be whatever they want to be. So there's a very concrete example of the secular mentality that abounds. And it totally abounds throughout the whole of the country right now, through Western
Christians are told that if we speak out against that we're not compassionate.
Yes.
We're not. And, you know, we're Christians and we want to be loved and accepted and we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And so we don't stand firm. We don't speak truth. And that's what I just want people to know. We have to speak truth, because if you don't stand for this, then those people that are speaking against what we believe, they're going to be the only voices that are heard. And we have to be willing to be that voice saying, this is not right, and speak up. And it's so important that we begin to do that. It's going to be extremely uncomfortable, because it's not a position that we've typically put ourselves in as Christians. But again, it's a time that I think we say enough is enough. And you know, this is just not right.
Exactly.
But we have to be grounded in what the Bible says.
Exactly.
So that we can make an effective argument, and we have that foundation, and we're not just speaking our own, because that's what everybody else is doing. They're speaking their own ideas.
Yeah.
We don't want to speak our ideas. We want to speak God's truth.
Yeah, God's truth.
And be armed with that.
You've got a very sort of bold statement in your, theme in your book, and that is the fact that you suggest that charity should only be for those who have no other means of support. Why do you say that?
I am a firm believer. I agree with Paul. If you don't work, you don't eat. If you can work, if you can work, you need to be working. And as a psychologist, we know, I know, people derive their value and their worth, their self-esteem, from their ability to contribute. It's one of the reasons that a lot of people put off retiring, because they know that when they are no longer producing and being a contributing member of society, that they're going to lose their value, their self-worth. And so, you know, my husband and I are getting close to retirement age, and we're starting to think, you know, we don't want to be in that boat. We want to keep working as long as we can. And yet, as a society, we're telling people, and everything that we've got going on right now in our country tells people, you know, if you don't want to work, that's okay. We'll take care of you.
Yeah.
Well, that only goes so far. And so, you know, I work with children with special needs, and there are truly, I absolutely get it. There are people who need assistance, who need help. They're single parents, and they can't make enough money to support their family. But let's don't just hand it to them. Let's ask them to contribute in some way to get that assistance. Paul, in his teachings, talks about how to take care of the widows, and you know, says if they truly are a widow and they have no family to support them, then absolutely the church should come alongside and help. But if they can work, or if they have a family that can provide for them, then that should be the avenue that they are provided for. And I think as a country, if we followed that same principle, our country would be a lot better off. We don't want to reward people for not working, because our society needs them to work. They need to work to be productive and to be, and to have that self-esteem and that self-worth. And, you know, it might not be that they can work full time. It may not be that they can work in the field that they used to work in or whatever. But let's don't let them shortchange themselves.
Exactly.
Let's encourage them,
exactly.
And give them the tools to be able to be a productive member of our society.
Absolutely. In a minute and a half, can you tell us what, as you suggest in your book, that Christians have to become change agents? How do we do that?
First of all, we have to stay in God's word. We have to know what it says. And then we have to put ourselves in positions that might be uncomfortable for us, get involved in our communities, live out our faith in our homes, in our communities, in our workplace, and then ask God to open doors of opportunity for us to share his message. And he will. He will open up doors. We just have to be willing to say, here am I, Lord, send me, and step forward in faith and in truth.
And all the time, making sure we stay in the word, because I think that's the
Absolutely.
most important, you know, so definitely we've got to do that. Again, the book is called Standing for God in America, How Christians Can Make a Difference in Today's Society. The author is Dr. Lynn Wagaman, W-O-G-A-M-O. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. Quickly tell us where we can get the book.
You may get it. It's on pre-order now through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. You can also go to my website, lynnwagaman.com, and I have books I can send out immediately. So
perfect.
Either any of those avenues.
Perfect. Thank you so much for writing this book, Lynn. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And make sure I'm one of the first interviews you do when you write your next one. Okay?
I absolutely will. Thank
absolutely.
You so much for having me.
Absolutely. God bless you lots and keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Don't go anywhere. I will be back with you right after this very short break with another world-class, inspiring guest.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.